May it please the court. The issue before the court today is basically framed in terms of we had an expert, Dr. Keyes, who the prosecutor in both his questioning and in his closing argument was able to portray and cast as unqualified because he didn't have the credentials and was incredible. And he relied on the transcript from the Goodwin case to make those attacks. In the Goodwin case, the state argued that Dr. Keyes was a purported expert who was not qualified to offer a diagnosis of mental retardation, that his testimony was properly rejected because he was not a licensed psychologist. He was neither credible nor qualified, and he was unworthy of belief. It is wrong for the state to now argue, as it is doing here, after having argued in the Goodwin case, that Dr. Keyes is a qualified and a credible expert.
You're basing it on what counsel knew at the time a year before the trial, though. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Our foundation for why counsel should have severed their association with Dr. Keyes is twofold. One, they had the personal experience that they were setting forth to the trial court in which they were expressing their outrage with Dr. Keyes, who filed an affidavit saying he did not have 10 hours and 7 weeks to be ready.
But that's very different. Then, I mean, just being irritated with him because he's not making himself available for trial is very different than saying he's an incompetent witness that they should have known about and not credible.
He was not saying he was not making himself available. He was saying he didn't have time to review what his obligation was. And when he got to trial, he testified that he had not watched the video, which was the only evidence the state heard from the state's expert, Dr. Heisler. That was his function in very being for being there.
But defense counsel came back and asked him, and he said, yes, in fact, I did watch the video.
Right. After there was a recess, and after they huddled together, essentially is what happened. I don't think any jury would have believed a word that Keyes had said.
But the problem is we can't judge what happened at the trial, and Goodwin was decided just by the appellate court just right before the trial. So we have to look at, as I understand your argument, it's that the case should never have gotten to that point because defense counsel should have realized Keyes would not be an adequate witness long before and found someone else to bring to trial. And so he didn't know, defense counsel, though, at that time that Keyes would incorrectly state that he hadn't seen the video when he had and didn't know the facts about the mother and other people in the family's mental retardation and other issues. What did he know at the time? You're saying he was ineffective and not getting rid of Keyes and getting someone else.
Counsel knew substantially in advance of what took place in Goodwin and his unpreparedness because PCR counsel in Goodwin told trial counsel here he was an unprepared witness who was found incredible. So they were on notice substantially in advance of trial, and trial counsel testified that they had that conversation with Goodwin's PCR counsel, and they were on notice from Goodwin's PCR counsel that he was unprepared and he was found incredible. And that was substantially in advance of trial. So they
what's the availability of the defense counsel to object to their own witness?
They wouldn't have to have objected. They should have severed the association, as was one of the cases we've cited is the Skaggs case, which indicates when you call an expert witness who you know is not qualified and not prepared, and you call him anyways, That is ineffective assistance of counsel, and that's what happened here. They were forewarned from their own personal dealings with Keyes and also by PCR counsel in Goodwin, don't use Keyes. He's a disaster. That's what they were warned.
But isn't that really a matter of judgment? I mean, if we, even knowing that they're warned that way, don't we have to rely upon trial counsel's judgment and who they want to call? How do we tell when that judgment's not good and bad?
Judge, I don't think it was a question of judgment. I think it was easier to say, we've got Keyes, now we've had him, and we're not going to get rid of him.
Were there other experts that would testify that this guy was retarded, or was he the only one?
Certainly there were others. There were the ones who were called at the PCR, but there was also Dr. Bernard, and this court referenced her prior testimony as support. But, I mean, the 2915 experts would have been available, and not only were they available, but as Hutchinson indicates, you don't have to call those express ones, just people who could have testified, and there was substantial evidence that was presented and was credible through qualified people.
But just you know, in the Goodwin case, he was found to be unprepared and incompetent, you know, largely for that reason and other reasons. Here, in your case, he was saying he didn't want to come to, because he had not yet prepared, he did not want the trial to go forth then, because he could not properly prepare. So isn't that a good thing? He actually wanted to prepare. I'm not sure. I mean, to some extent, that could be seen as correcting his error in the Goodwin case. He went unprepared here. He said, I don't want to testify because I haven't had time to prepare. So I'm not sure how that told counsel he would actually go unprepared when the case actually went. Didn't it sort of say that he didn't want to go to trial because he was not prepared and he knew that was not okay?
Judge, I don't think that that is what you ought to draw from what took place in Goodwin, because it was such a disaster, as this court so found, and found that Keyes was not credible as to anything. And counsel had the findings from Goodwin. They had them in their custody.
And that's what I was kind of getting to. It seems like you're relying on more than just those facts, that whether he was prepared. You're saying he simply should never have been qualified as an expert witness and they should have known that?
They should have known that because he was found not to be qualified as an expert for this kind of case. He may be qualified, and as the prosecutor cast him, as an advocate, but he's not a clinician who this court said was neither a psychologist nor a psychiatrist, and that's what made him unqualified. And that's the fundamental problem here. Is we've had one jury who heard evidence about Ernest Johnson being mentally retarded, but it heard it from an unqualified expert who was incredible, and he showed himself to be incredible when he testified he hadn't viewed the state's video, which was the only significant evidence that was presented by the state's case.
Now, wouldn't that be the idea of the expert being qualified or not? That's a decision by the judge. Isn't that something that could have been raised at the direct appeal? That
actually,
the judge qualified him as an expert should not have qualified him as an expert.
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up, Judge Tideman, because
Thank
in this
you.
Direct appeal, one of the arguments was that there should have been a verdict directed in favor of Mr. Johnson's, in favor of him, that he was mentally retarded. And I'm going to quote from this court's opinion. This court's opinion said that that claim was rejected because there were legitimate concerns about Dr. Keyes's qualifications. That's in his direct appeal. So this court on his direct appeal said there were legitimate concerns about his qualifications. And counsel was on notice of his qualifications because they had the Goodwin findings far in advance of the trial, and they had had this personal bad experience with him where they were saying they were incensed by his behavior and that they would do anything to be sure that he was here and prepared next time. And the trial judge found him to be – the trial judge's critique was that it sounds like he's really dedicated, and trial counsel counters with, you think he would be? So they believed he was not dedicated to this case and seeing that it was tried in a fair way.
Does it have to be a choice between Dr. Keyes and someone else, or why? You're not claiming he should have kept him but gotten someone else too, or why was it, why did keeping Dr. Keyes, because he offered a lot, he had diagnosed him as mentally retarded, his study was cited by the U.S. Supreme Court, he testified successfully in other cases. Why wasn't it reasonable to do that? And maybe you're arguing he should have also gotten someone else, but that's a separate question.
Judge, I think it's really been a misnomer or a misleading for people to say Keyes was cited by the U.S. Supreme Court. And I've included the articles of Keyes in our appendix. And what he was cited for is his advocacy skills on behalf of the mentally retarded, and not that he is a clinician qualified to testify.
Isn't that a trial strategy decision then? I mean, What experts to qualify, who helps, who doesn't help, who might be good even though they aren't a psychiatrist, those sorts of things. Why isn't that just a matter of trial strategy?
Judge, I don't think it's strategy when you have the findings in Goodwin and you know what they are and he's found not qualified, which is what this court said. And if it's a strategy, it's not a reasonable strategy. Strategy still has to be reasonable. And to go forward in the face of findings as they were in Goodwin, as egregious as the findings are about Keyes' conduct and his qualifications, that is when counsel needs to sever those ties. And that's what the Skaggs opinion said. That's what McBride, which is also cited in our brief, has found, is when counsel is on notice of these kinds of problems, you just don't continue head on, and you need to make a decision to sever those ties.
So, he was the first one to ever testify to the fact that the defendant was mentally retarded, and he consistently did so even in this last hearing. What's the problem there?
Judge, again, I think the record has been misrepresented because he's not the first, and the prosecutor argued that Keyes was the first, but Dr. Bernard, and this court relied on Dr. Bernard in sending this case back for a hearing on mental retardation because she had found him mentally retarded. I've referenced in my brief the testimony that she's given both in her PCR testimony. Both they were both PCR prior PCRs. One was a deposition. One was a hearing in court in which she expressed that her belief was that Ernest Johnson was always mentally retarded. What? So that's not the case at all.
Isn't your argument really that, I'm sorry, that, but that he should, they should have then, going back to my question, called someone in addition? I mean, Keyes clearly offered some things, but what, was no one else called to testify to mental retardation on part of the defendant?
Dr. Smith testified to Ernest being mentally retarded, but he said his change in opinion, he'd always said he was not mentally retarded, was based upon Keyes.
And what happened to Bernard?
The record is muddled and clear, and I'm not, I don't know what happened to her. There's statements in the record about difficulties locating her. Her deposition testimony says she had health issues with lupus and had surgery as a result of it. I don't know why Bernard was not called, but the issue is they should have gotten someone other than Keyes, whether it was Bernard or the 2915 experts who were called to testify, who were qualified and credible people who were prepared about the record, unlike Keyes. Keyes was called to be the counterpoint to the state, and he wasn't prepared to do that.
What was the time frame? Because Goodwin was handed down on Tuesday of trial. Is that on the appellate level? Is that correct?
That's correct.
So what are you telling us the time frame that trial counsel had of knowing that trial, when you're saying trial counsel should have known not to call Keyes?
Trial counsel had in excess of a year prior to trial because they talked to this PCR counsel and Goodwin's
fine. You're saying a year ahead of trial he talked
counsel to testified that it was a good bit, her express testimony was a good bit before trial, which to me is substantially before trial. That was her precise testimony, that she spoke to PCR counsel a good bit before trial.
Saying that the trial court had rejected Keyes, had found against Goodwin because he found Keyes' testimony not credible.
Exactly, exactly. And the findings in Goodwin were entered 2 years before trial. So they had PCR from Goodwin's case that put them on notice of Keyes. The findings were entered 2 years before. We're not relying upon 2 days during 2 days before trial saying they should have then.
Right, but it's important when.
Absolutely.
I mean, if there was such notice, because the trial findings 2 years before, another attorney who wasn't part of that case wouldn't know those trial findings. So it had to be when there was a conversation with another attorney.
And that conversation was, as testified by the trial counsel, was a good bit before trial. I think it's telling that when they get in the middle of trial, they file a continuance motion saying, we want to abandon Keyes to replace him. That's what the continuance motion says. That was the tack that they said they wanted to take. And we're not relying on the timing of when they filed that motion, but the point is they said, we've got to disassociate ourselves from Keyes. Well, and what this court said about Keyes was not a good thing.
What did they say about why they kept Keyes?
In the motion, it says because of him being cited in Atkins. Because of him having been...
I mean, did they testify? Was there evidence as to...
They didn't testify. The motion, and it's part of this record as a supplemental legal file, that they felt like Keyes had been cited in Atkins, and that's why they kept him.
So they said it was trial strategy. And so your argument
is
it's not reasonable.
If you want to consider it as trial strategy, it's not a reasonable trial strategy because the basis for citing him in Atkins is not that he's a clinician who's qualified to testify. He's cited as an advocate for the mentally retarded. That's what he's cited for. People have inappropriately used that citation to call him, but...
But they were deposed or did testify? I mean, his counsel were deposed or
they testified at the
hearing.
They testified at the hearing.
And were they asked what their trial strategy was? And they said because he was cited in Atkins?
That was the gist of their testimony, is that because he was relied upon in Atkins, that was why they retained him in the first place and stuck with him.
So we would have to find that was not reasonable.
It absolutely is not a reasonable strategy. When you look back to a year, when they were put on notice by Goodwin's PCR counsel, substantially in advance of trial, these are the problems with Keyes. This is what was found about Keyes. At that point in time, you have to sever your ties. And that's what they told the trial court in the middle of trial. They wanted to do that then. They wanted to replace Keyes because that's what their pleading said. I think it's really telling that while the state points out there have been three penalty trials, what has happened here is there's only been one penalty trial on mental retardation, and that mental retardation case was done with the use of an expert who this court and the Goodwin court found was unqualified and incredible. And that was the position the state, and this is not about shopping for experts. This is about having someone who's qualified. What the jury heard was someone who was unqualified. So Ernest Johnson never had his day in court to hear from a qualified expert that he is mentally retarded. And they didn't hear that his mother was mentally retarded and his brother was mentally retarded. I think the average person, and didn't hear from Keyes, average person hearing that someone's mother's mentally retarded without having an advanced knowledge of genetics would say, you know, there's probably a good chance this guy's mentally retarded because that's his background. That's his biology, if nothing else.
Skinner versus Oklahoma.
I agree. I agree, Judge.
Oliver Wendell Holmes, three generations holding that you could sterilize people, in three generations of mental illness.
Right. The problem with Keyes is that my time is up, is that he did not have the critical facts to testify about them and what they were. Thank you.
May it please the court. A-list Ben Johns and Stephen Parkus, if they were asked, would probably say that Dr. Keyes was a fantastic witness. Those were two men, murderers, sentenced to death, who Dr. Keyes evaluated, found to be mentally retarded, and both of their sentences were commuted to life without parole based on the fact that they were mentally retarded.
But after that and prior to this trial, the facts about Dr. Keyes' background and training came out, and the fact that he was not a certified clinician, that he was not a psychologist or psychiatrist, and that might not have the training to render an opinion in this area. So how... those and the citation in Atkins certainly make him look like a great person to call, but did they have to also be aware or consider this more recent information they got about him? And why was it reasonable after getting that to continue to call him?
Well, the record really doesn't tell us when they discovered this information. The only thing in the record is Ms. Carlisle, one of defendant's trial counsel, stating that at some point, she didn't know when, before trial, that she talked to PCR or counsel in the Goodwin case, and that PCR counsel in the Goodwin case told her that Keyes was unprepared.
And would that have been, if they'd learned that a year before, would that have been sufficient for us to find them ineffective and not replacing him, or is that just...
I don't think so, Your Honor, because when I read this transcript, I get to that point, and she said that PCR counsel said Keyes was unprepared. I'm looking for the next question. Tell us how. Nothing. There's nothing in the record saying how was Keyes unprepared.
Well, he hadn't looked at the videotape, or he hadn't reviewed the evidence, and he had to be reminded that he had reviewed it. That would look pretty bad as far as prepared or not prepared.
All of that happened during trial, so we can't put that on counsel knowing that before, all what they're claiming that Keyes in this particular trial said he hadn't seen the video and some other, what I think are trivial collateral matters that he'd forgotten.
But if they'd been aware of the Goodwin case and that he'd been found to be unqualified.
But you have to remember, Keyes was the first, according to his testimony, he was the first person to have evaluated Mr. Johnson and found him to be mentally retarded.
What about Bernard?
Bernard. It's hard to tell. In her deposition that is part of the post-conviction record in this case, she talks about giving him an IQ test. What was the score, Dr. Bernard? I don't remember. Somewhere in the 70s.
Well, no, she said 71 to 75, I think 73 or something, which would be...
Right.
I mean, under that 5-point range, mentally retarded.
Well, if you use the five point range. She also testified in the first post-conviction proceeding in this case and was asked about her evaluation of Mr. Johnson. And she said that she did not perform a complete battery of neuro psychological testing. She only did an evaluation to get sort of a picture of defendant's current functioning. And then she was asked a question about his functioning, and she said, well, he probably always functioned in the at least mildly mentally retarded range. Okay, she did say those words way back when in the first PCR. She did not do an evaluation, a proper evaluation to determine mental retardation. Of course, mental retardation involves sub-average intellectual functioning and continual extensive related deficits in categories of adaptive functioning. That's what Dr. Keyes did. He did both.
Can you address, opposing counsel strongly argues that it wasn't simply a question of Keyes or no expert, that counsel should have known there were other experts out there. He found them at the 2915, but it wouldn't have to be them, that looking at these records, other experts were available that could have testified to his mental retardation, and counsel was ineffective in not looking for them. How do we evaluate that and looking at what was brought up later in the 2915? Can we rely on that to kind of go backwards and say what they could have done at the time of trial? How do those figure together?
Well, and of course, this court's always held that counsel's not ineffective for choosing one expert over another or for not going out and finding more experts.
Well, if the one's incompetent or not able to testify to what you need, I mean, there is unreasonable trial strategy, which is what he's saying. And whether it's unreasonable may depend on if other experts were available or possible to get that would have been better, isn't it?
Well, there's no questioning of trial counsel by post-conviction attorneys about, well, why didn't you go out and find some more experts? What we know is Keyes did all the evaluation, all the proper evaluation that you do to determine if someone's mentally retarded.
Are there any standards in the as far as education, as far as doing a number of examinations in order to do a death penalty certification for mental retardation? I know Virginia, after Atkins, set out a whole protocol on how you deal with these situations. Are there any standards set out by the profession, by the psychology profession, for this kind of witness?
That I'm not personally aware of, and I know there wasn't any evidence presented in this record about whether that's the case.
Well, how do you if you haven't answered that?
I've answered his question.
How do you respond to the initial argument by your opposing counsel that the state is taking a position on appeal that is contrary to the position taken at trial? That at trial it's clear the state argued to the jury and brought out in its cross-examination that Keyes was not qualified and he was not a competent witness to give this opinion. Are you taking the opposite position in this proceeding, saying absolutely he was qualified, there was nothing wrong with presenting him, and can you do that?
Well, Your Honor, if you take their argument to its logical extension, what they're saying is every time an expert witness is called, and on direct appeal, the state argues that the opinion is not credible for whatever various reasons that might be in the record, and the state prevails on direct appeal, then automatically you have to find defense counsel, in that case, ineffective, because then the state could never take the contrary position that it was reasonable to call this person if they first argued that he wasn't credible.
Does the state have any obligation to seek justice or truth if, in let's say, hypothetically in this case, they knew that the expert witness was unqualified and they allowed it to go forward so they could argue against this witness because they knew it wasn't a good witness?
Your Honor, there's a difference between arguing that a particular expert witness's opinion is not credible and in an ad hominem attack on the person himself or herself.
And what happened in this case?
Well, in this case, below, and they did make an argument in the direct appeal from this third penalty phase that there was evidence that he was mentally retarded and this court should just enter an order setting aside the death sentences and sentencing to life without parole, and the court did not do that based on the evidence.
But what kind of attack did the state make on Dr. Keyes at trial?
Well, an attack that that counsel, trial counsel, defense counsel, knew was coming. He wasn't a psychiatrist. He wasn't a clinical psychologist. He was a school psychologist who did IQ testing on students all the time. But he also performed the adaptive functioning evaluation. So the counsel knew that there was going to be this attack on Dr. Keyes. But they also needed his...
I'm sorry, are there any standards available that say you must be a psychiatrist and not a school psychologist in order to testify?
That I'm not aware of, and there was no objection made during this third penalty phase that Dr. Keyes is unqualified. But he cannot testify at all.
But you're not saying the state can argue completely opposite facts and argue on direct appeal that he was incompetent and his opinions were not worthy of credibility and now say, oh, he was the best expert in the world. You're saying that the fact that Yeh argued he was incompetent on direct appeal does not mean counsel were ineffective in choosing to use him because he was the best they had or because he was borderline, or because why? Why is it not? We can't have the state taking completely conflicting factual positions because then one is false. Oh. So to explain what they're doing here that does not cross that line.
And I handled the direct appeal. I don't remember, and I looked through the brief, mm-hmm. I never said he was incompetent or that he was wholly unqualified to render opinions.
As a matter of fact, he was permitted to render opinions by the trial judge.
The judge allowed him to, basically.
So he had to have skill and knowledge and all that. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I mean, basically what you're saying is you ought to be allowed to argue the record at these different proceedings to suggest that it supports the findings by the courts in those different proceedings.
Right.
There's disputed testimony and every, I mean, absent not cross-examining an expert witness at all, right, at some point in time in the adversary system, you try to point out the weaknesses in everybody's case, right?
Right.
Then you do the same thing in the post-conviction relief.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's what the state is doing here. We're not saying that Dr. Keyes was completely incompetent. It was so unreasonable for trial counsel to have even called him because look how incompetent.
What you're saying is that he was qualified to render opinion testimony under the under the standards of expert witnesses. And the real problem that they're expressing is that his testimony is weightless. I mean, the weight given to the testimony for that is up to the finder of fact, and this was weightless. I mean, there's no there.
Your Honor, this happens all the time. There's experts in this case that have testified both for the defense and for the prosecution. In this very case, Dr. Perotiker, he's testified for the prosecution numerous times, and he testified for Mr. Johnson in this particular case. Now, Dr. Perotiker's opinion in this case, argued in direct appeal, but that opinion, based on the facts of this case, was not credible. No one attacked Dr. Perotiker. Dr. Keyes, what he found, what his evaluation in this particular case, on the facts of this case, his opinion that Mr. Johnson is mentally retarded, just is not credible.
You're not saying he could never offer a credible opinion, but just that he didn't in this case, in effect.
No, I'm not. I can't sit here and say that now, that he could never offer a credible opinion about any of this. The fact that he's not a psychiatrist or psychologist, sure, that affects that could have affected his credibility with the jury. Maybe it didn't. And why counsel was not wasn't unreasonable for them to call Dr. Keyes was he performed all the groundwork that then allowed their psychologist, Dr. Smith, who also testified during the direct appeal, to give the opinion mm-hmm. that Mr. Johnson is mentally retarded.
If they hadn't called witness Keyes, wouldn't the subsequent psychologist testimony have been undermined?
It's funnier.
By the fact, I mean, they could say what they relied on, but then the trier of fact could wonder, well, why didn't they call Mr. Keyes if he's the one that did the testing?
Well, and it's funny you should mention that, Your Honor, because without Dr. Keyes' evaluation, his work that he performed in this case, we wouldn't be here because Dr. Smith wouldn't have had any basis to find the mental retardation because it was Dr. Keyes' IQ testing and Dr. Keyes' adaptive functioning testing that he relied on in giving that opinion. And the experts, the the experts that they called on in the post-conviction case that they say they should have called, they all three of them said, well, yeah, we relied on what the work Dr. Keyes performed, Vineland. And the court's familiar with Vineland. It's a test. It's an assessment of adaptive functioning that you give to friends, family members, teachers, people that know the subject to determine if they have deficits in adaptive functioning. Without that work that Dr. Keyes performed, the PCR experts, Dr. Smith and the direct in the original penalty phase would have had nothing to base their opinion on. So it was crucial. It would have been incompetent for counsel not to have called Dr. Keyes after he had performed this work and made the determination that Mr. Johnson was mentally retarded. You know, Your Honor, in some cases, no matter how many experts you can get to testify, the facts of a particular case sometimes don't bear out what a defendant would hope.
Well, what we really have in this case, because we've seen this case a couple of times previously in my recollection, maybe more, is that he kind of exists in that band of, well, maybe he is and maybe he isn't. Would you agree to that? I mean, he's somewhere between not smart and retarded.
I'll agree that he definitely operates in an average or maybe even below average.
Let's go a little bit lower than that, okay? Because there are some psychologists who opine that he's retarded, and some opine no, he's not average, but he's not retarded. So in that band, you're going to find a lot of disagreement. I guess that it's kind of an unknowable thing, and at some point, somebody's got to decide, I suppose.
And the jury.
In this case. Right.
Right. And the jury in this case decided. And you know, I don't think there's very strong evidence here that Mr. Johnson is mentally retarded, that he fits the definition that the legislature has given us, and that those conditions manifested itself before the age of 18. It's doing these evaluations, and they did have Dr. Keyes give his opinion. They had Dr. Smith, a licensed psychologist, give his opinion. What they based their opinion on, and that's really what the heart of this is, not about which experts should have been called or shouldn't have been called, because if we go to that, counsel was certainly not ineffective in this case for choosing those two experts. And in fact, Ms. Carlisle testified during the PCR evidentiary hearing that she thought two was enough, and that's all she wanted, presumably not wanting to overload the jury with multiple experts coming in and testifying. She had Dr. Smith testify about mental retardation, and Dr. Smith testified at length about fetal alcohol syndrome, which is another thing that's mentioned. So in this particular case, you cannot say that counsel was ineffective for choosing the experts that they chose and putting on the evidence that they put on. Some cases just don't, as I was saying earlier, they just don't bear the fruit that perhaps a defendant or defense counsel wants it to bear. They did the best that they could. There was some evidence, and it really was based on Dr. Bernard's statement during the deposition and during the first PCR that was she had done no testing whatsoever and just basically blurted out that maybe he was mildly mentally retarded. Okay, so this court sees that after Atkins. Let's have a hearing. Let's find out. There was a hearing. All this evidence was presented. The third jury now, 36 people, have found, in that third jury, well, 12 of them found he was not mentally retarded and went on to consider the rest of the case and thought he deserved three death sentences, which they recommended and which the trial court's now imposed. There was no ineffective assistance of counsel in this particular case, and I'd ask this court to affirm the motion court's judgment, unless there's any other questions. Thank you, Your Honors.
I'd like to address a couple of Judge Breckenridge's questions. On the bottom of page 33 of my brief, I expressly quote what trial counsel's testimony was as to what they knew about Goodwin. And she testified she knew a good bit before trial what had taken place in Goodwin. As to, and again, addressing some of the concerns Judge Breckenridge had, you asked about how did the state at this trial portray Dr. Keyes. Their tack was to cast him as unqualified, and they used the Goodwin transcript. They had it. The proceedings on the different that took place that are on the record show they had that transcript, and they cross-examined him. In fact, at one point, they're cross-examining Dr. Smith to say, why would you rely on Dr. Keyes when he's not qualified? And the prosecutor turns and says to the court, Goodwin, this court's opinion in Goodwin authorized that. And he's allowed to ask that questioning of Smith. That's, why would Smith rely on Keyes when he is unqualified?
And that's would we be holding that if an expert is ever held to be unqualified, then it's per se unreasonable to call him in a later case?
Judge, I don't see how on the facts of Goodwin and what the state argued in Goodwin, which was that he was unqualified because he's not a psychologist, this court's opinion expressly found he was unqualified because he's neither a psychologist nor a psychiatrist to express an opinion on mental retardation. Keyes is simply unqualified.
Was he essential, though, as a witness in the case to testify to testing that was important for Dr. Smith's opinion?
It was essential to have someone who was qualified and prepared. Dr. Keyes was not. When he's asked about the very reason he's called, which is the Heisler video, he doesn't remember it. And then he just comes back after a recess and says, yeah, I watched it and I saw it. And that's the only thing we know.
But the defense counsel certified the expert. Dr. Keyes is an expert. Did the prosecution made no objection to him being certified as an expert?
I'm not sure I know what you mean by certified.
The trial court found he was competent to testify, right?
I don't think there was ever an express finding by the court or by anyone that he's competent.
But he was allowed to give opinion testimony at trial.
He was allowed to give opinion testimony, but shown an attack based upon what took place in Goodwin. And getting back to some of what Judge Fisher was inquiring about, yes, Smith based his opinion on Keyes, but Keyes was shown to be unqualified as cast by the prosecutor. In fact, in closing argument, the prosecutor argued he's not qualified, emphatically argued that. You should not believe him because he's not qualified.
Could the court, could the prosecutor have cross-examined Smith even with Keyes not there and said you're relying on Keyes' findings? Keyes is not a clinician, is he? Keyes is not a psychiatrist, is he? Keyes is not a psychologist, is he? And so forth, and done the same kind of impeachment of Keyes's credibility, you know, with whether he was there or not. I mean, those defects in his studies and his work are there regardless whether he testifies, and would have undermined Smith's opinion or the 2915 experts' opinions anyway, wouldn't they?
His studies go to what the Penry case didn't allow, which was someone to be excluded because they're mentally retarded. They don't go to expressing opinions about whether particular defendants are mentally retarded. I think the problem with
they all rely on Key's findings here, though, about this? As I understand the state's argument, he said that Smith and the 2915 experts all relied on findings by Keyes as to this defendant as the basis for their opinion.
I think the state has misrepresented. The findings are that the 2915 experts relied on Keyes. But when you go, and we detailed this in our brief, they relied on everyone's, including adverse opinions that were expressed by the court examiners and the defense examiners. They even relied on Heisler, who was the state's expert. So they didn't rely just on Keyes. That's just a misrepresentation
of
the
factual
record.
But you need to have some findings before he's 18. So maybe Keyes had the findings and the test before he was 18. So they needed to look at that when they're making the decisions.
Judge, in fact, this court, when it sent it back, said there was evidence before Ernest Johnson was 18 that he was mentally retarded. The prosecutor argued to the jury that there was nothing to support that he was found, that there was evidence to support he was mentally retarded pre-18. So contrary to this court's own opinion, the prosecutor argued and direct contradiction to what this court said in its opinion. I believe I'm over my time. I ask this court reverse unless there's other questions. Judge Fisher?
Well, I was going to say, who besides Keyes did the testing for which an opinion could be based upon that this gentleman was mentally retarded?
Who decides whether Keyes did testing?
No. Who, who besides or who in addition to Keyes
did
actual testing that would be the basis for an opinion.
The 2915 experts did their own testing, and they did two IQ testings. Dr. Carner got an IQ of 70 and 71, mm-hmm. virtually identical. And there was also IQ testing done by the state's expert, Dr. Heisler, which is very close. So there's IQ testing that is very consistent with him being mentally retarded.
And then the evidence, and what specifically was the evidence that supported the finding that he was before he was 18?
That he was before 18 is the IQ testing that happened when he was 8 years old and 12 years old, this school testing of IQ testing that was done. You know, when Ernest Johnson is 8 and 12 years old, he's not thinking, I'm going to commit a murder down the road and I don't have a low IQ. Those IQs were in the mentally retarded range, right. And they're part of his school records, which are part of this record that has been filed with the court. So that's where that comes from, that it was pre-18.
How old is Mr. Johnson? I'm sorry.
Did they put a number on the pre-18 school records?
The pre-18, there were two IQ scores. One, the first one when he was 8 was 77. The second one when he was 12 was 63.
How old is he now?
He is 50 years old.
How many?
He's 50.
60?
50.
50.
He was born in 1960, so he's 50 years old.
Any further questions? Case is
taken under submission. I ask this court to reverse. Thank you.